Following the recent ISIS attacks in Paris, a football fan was heard shouting a derogatory slur against Muslims during a moment of silence preceding a Green Bay Packers football game. Republican presidential candidates Donald Trump and Marco Rubio have suggested cracking down in various ways on mosques and Muslims in the United States. In Texas, an armed group protested outside a mosque on Saturday. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 24th. We will talk with a guest from Wisconsin's Muslim community about Islamophobia in Wisconsin and in the United States. And we will welcome your questions and your own experiences. Are you a Muslim and living in Wisconsin? Do you see a rise in Islamophobia in the wake of the attacks in Paris? Are you witnessing, as a resident of Wisconsin, any anti-Muslim rhetoric or actions in your community? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Othman Atta, the Executive Director of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
At the Packers-Lions football game in Green Bay, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, a fan was heard to yell, "Muslims suck," during a moment of silence for the victims of the Paris attacks. Some dispute saying they're not sure that's exactly what was said, but that's what Aaron Rodgers heard, and that's what some other people heard. Where do you think comments like this come from?
Well, I think that the unfortunate part is because of incidents that are going on around the world, and obviously most recently in Paris, that there are individuals who will unfortunately try to malign the entire faith of Islam and all Muslims with those particular crimes. And I think that that's unfair because they're taking a broad brush and trying to say that an entire religion and all the followers of that religion are responsible for those criminal acts.
And Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, when asked about it later, criticized the comment, saying, "It's that kind of prejudicial ideology that I think puts us in the position we are in today." First, your reaction to Rodgers saying that.
You know, I was really impressed that in his press conference afterwards that he actually decided to address that, to basically take it head on. I mean, in this particular climate where you have a lot of political opportunists, especially some of our presidential candidates that are trying to exploit the tragedy for political gain, I felt that it was really a class act for him to go up and say, "Look, that's not the kind of thing that we want." For someone to actually interrupt a moment of silence and to make those kind of remarks.
Yeah. Do you agree with Rodgers that it's that kind of prejudicial ideology that puts us in the position we are in today?
Well, I just think it's the other side of the coin of ISIS. I mean, you have ISIS and groups such as that that are extremists, that are intolerant of other individuals, whether Muslims who they don't agree with because Muslims are their largest target, or other religious groups. And someone like this who yells that out is basically the other side, that they're also intolerant of all Muslims because they happen to be Muslims. And so, I think that that kind of attitude, whether it is associated with violence or not, but I think that kind of attitude is the problem.
Yeah. So in general, how do Muslim communities like yours experience the aftermath of terrorist attacks? What reaction do you notice? How do you respond?
You know, there's really two kinds of reaction, and I'll tell you, there are the nuts out there who will call up our organization and yell, some epithets and, you know, very profane language and about, you know, "Go back to where you came from." Obviously, most Muslims were actually even now born here. Just all kinds of hateful rhetoric. So that's the one side. And I would say that that's actually the minority, the very small side, the troubling side. But we also have a lot of individuals who approach us who say, "Hey, look, you know, we really are not like those individuals that are the hateful, the intolerant, They're very supportive. I mean, I even had someone the other day on PayPal send an email and a donation and say, look, you know, we understand that you folks are not ISIS and you don't support groups like ISIS, and we understand that you're being targeted, and we're willing to support you in any way that we can. And that's really the overwhelming sentiment that I believe that we realize. Unfortunately, you know, there is still a lot of negative, but we try not to focus on that.
Yeah. What about someone who maybe doesn't, though, call up your office and start screaming at you? What about somebody who's just, I don't know, maybe just fearful, thinking, well, maybe someone in the Muslim community might become radicalized, and that's why I'm afraid?
You know, look, I think that when we hear of these things that happen in Paris or in other parts of the world, I mean, obviously, there's always that sense of fear that some crazy person can do something. And it could be from someone like an ISIS, or it could be someone like the individual who went into the black church down south, sat with them for a while and killed them, or someone who went into a movie theater and just starts shooting people up. I mean, it doesn't obviously have to be someone from a religious background or supposedly, religious motivation. And so I understand that fear, but I think that when we have our politicians that play on people's fears and fear-monger themselves, I don't think that does anyone a service. I think what we want people to know is that from our own community, we are exceptionally vigilant. I mean, if someone commits a violent act, I mean, they're going to hurt us as members of this community and citizens of the society just as much as they're hurting everyone else. I mean, I don't want to see my kids or my family get hurt. I don't want to see other kids or other families get hurt from other communities. I mean, regardless of who they are, what faith or no faith, it really doesn't matter. I mean, we're all humans, and yeah, I mean, we fear any kind of violence coming from any source.
Well, it's not just Green Bay Packers games where we're hearing some anti-Muslim rhetoric. We're hearing it on the presidential campaign trail. Donald Trump is doubling down and saying that he indeed claims to have seen on TV thousands of Muslims in New Jersey cheering the destruction of the Twin Towers on 9/11, though there is no evidence that this happened, and various fact-checking organizations say that this is just a false claim. He continues to say that he saw this.
And this is the sad part. I mean, it's an obvious lie. It's an obvious fabrication. Although, you know, he was questioned about it on multiple occasions, and he continues to adamantly say that, yes, it happened and I saw it. And yet there is no evidence that any such thing took place. And yet he will go out, he will repeat that rhetoric in his speeches, and that tends to really cause people who already have a lack of understanding of Islam, or who have almost no understanding of Islam, to think that, hey, you know, look, Muslims are violent, they're against this country, they're not loyal. We need to, watch them. And that's why then these politicians can promote things like, hey, you know, we need to have a religious test. We need Muslims to register, as if we're Nazi Germany and we're going to have people register based on religion. Or that we should only allow Christians into this country, not Muslims. I mean, so when they prey on people's prejudices, when they are themselves peddling fear and bigotry, then they can get away with statements which try to even sideline American Muslims even more.
Yeah. Trump also suggested that mosques be watched more closely, or even closed, as did candidate Marco Rubio. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I guess they haven't heard about the First Amendment. I mean, I find it appalling that someone who's running for the highest position in the land does not seem to understand the First Amendment of the Constitution. I mean, clearly, if there's any kind of violence that's coming from any source. I am sure law enforcement, whether FBI or other law enforcement, are checking into it and they're being vigilant to make sure that something does not happen. But to say that, hey, we're going to go out and we're going to, you know, close mosques down and things of that sort, I really find that kind of an argument to be an appalling type of argument.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue our conversation with Othman Atta, Executive Director of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. He is reacting to some rhetoric we are hearing on the presidential campaign trail, and we are talking about how we can combat Islamophobia in Wisconsin and in the United States. We're welcoming your questions, your reactions, your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with the Executive Director of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee about Islamophobia and the anti-Muslim rhetoric and actions that we are seeing around the country and right here in Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, and perhaps your own experiences. Are you Muslim and living in Wisconsin? Do you see a rise in Islamophobia in the wake of the attacks in Paris? Or do you believe that this Islamophobia is justified in any way because of the terrorists' basis in an interpretation of Islam? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Gary in Brookfield is with us. Hello, Gary.
Hello, Joy. Nice talking again this morning and to your guest. What I wanted to ask is this, is about a little over a week ago in the PBS NewsHour on their book review, they had a guy from the Brookings Institution who just wrote a book about ISIL. And essentially he said ISIL is all based on a concept that they're in the Quran. They trace, their leader traces things that have been said, that there's going to be some, that we're on the verge of having some apocalyptic battle that's supposed to occur at a small town in northern Syria. And they're attracting all these followers and people from all over the world to go over there to be a part of this battle.
So that sounds like present day. Is that what your point, Gary?
Well, my point is I'm interested in knowing, you know, he's saying that the Muslims, these Muslims are of this belief. And I'm interested in knowing, is this in true? Is there some philosophy that exists in the Quran that this battle is supposed to be taking, a battle between the Muslims and the infidels?
Othman Atta?
You know, I think every faith community has an end of times kind of narrative. With the issue of Islam, I certainly have not heard what Gary the caller has actually mentioned. As a Muslim, part of the Muslim community, I have never heard of that particular narrative that this is what Muslims are going to be ingathered, kind of like a final battle of Armageddon. You know, if there are certain individuals that may be trying to present some kind of a narrative and try to recruit people, especially ignorant individuals, to come and be part of such a battle, I mean, that may be possible. You know, the problem, any kind of religious or political text can be approached by someone who has some preconceived notions, or they want to try to justify a particular behavior and so forth. And so anything can be misinterpreted, falsely interpreted, skewed to basically justify a particular agenda. And this is what ISIS is doing. I mean, what I think is important for the caller to know is that every major religious scholar, not only in the United States, but I would say around the world, has actually rejected the narrative of ISIS, the ideology of ISIS, the views of ISIS, and condemn them for being what they are, which is an extremist terrorist group.
Well, along those same lines, Travis on Facebook says, Americans want to secure their borders, have a way of verifying refugees, and want to eliminate an enemy who wants all Christians to convert or die. And we're the ones with a hatred problem? What's your response to that?
You know, again, this is part of the stereotypes that they have about Islam and Muslims. Actually, if you look at some of the oldest Christian communities in the world, they actually continue to exist in Muslim lands, although Muslims were there for over 1,300 years. How is it that Muslims would try to kill and convert non-Christians, non-Muslims, Christians, Jews, others? And yet, if you look at these Muslim societies that have existed for over 1,300 years, they have all had Christian communities there, Jewish communities, and so forth. Again, just because groups like ISIS or other extremist terrorist groups may target Christians, and again, I want to reiterate that the largest group of victims of these groups are actually other Muslims. But if they target Christians or others, that does not mean that that is what Islam represents. That does not mean that this is what Islam calls for. It is just what these particular extremist groups are calling for.
You know, following the Paris attacks, Muslims all over the world condemned them. I remember seeing a social media campaign, "Not in my name." Yet people still ask why, after such attacks, where the Muslim condemnation is. Is this tiring to you?
You know, we continue every incident. I mean, every major organization that I know, our organization, whenever there's any kind of major incident, we try to go out, make sure that people understand that this has nothing to do with us. Part of the problem is that there is such a lack of general information about Islam that very few people, especially here in the United States, know Muslims or have interacted with Muslims. And most of the information that they get about Islam tends to be negative because either, you know, in terms of the news tends to focus just on, you know, the atrocities, the negative things. And even in popular media, I mean, I ask people, can you name me one or two examples of a positive portrayal of a Muslim on any in any movie or any TV program or sitcom? So most people just are constantly fed this negative image of Islam. They don't have that background, and so they tend to believe this negative information, and they don't have something to balance it out. I mean, if I can use an example, I mean, if someone says, "Hey, the Westboro Baptist Church or the Ku Klux Klan represents Christianity," I mean, most people would laugh at that and they say, "Oh, that can't be true because we know Christianity, or we know Christians, and we know that these are just, you know, crazy groups." Yet when it comes to Muslims, they don't have that reference point.
Yeah. James on Facebook says, "You are more likely to be killed by some white guy with an AR-15, anger issues, and a desire to go out in a blaze of glory than by Daesh or any other Islamic extremist." What do you think?
Well, according to the FBI statistics, that is actually true, that in the United States, the likelihood that you will be killed by a white male extremist is much, much higher than by anyone who claims to be a Muslim extremist. And that's a fact. And yet, I mean, and this is the hypocrisy. When our politicians are saying, you know what, let us stop these refugees from coming in. And again, so far from my understanding of the about 2,000-some Syrian refugees that came in, more than half have been children, and about one quarter of them were over 60 years old. And clearly the U.S. government vets them and makes sure that that they are not going to be a threat to our nation at all. And I understand that, and I agree that they should be properly vetted because I don't want to see any extremist, any violent person coming into the United States. But the hypocrisy is, if we said, okay, you know, let's ask all white males to submit to certain tests before they get weapons, just like we want to do for these refugees, that we want three layers of government or three individuals to personally certify that these individuals will not be a danger. Will we apply that same standard to white males who are more likely to kill in this country than a Muslim extremist? Of course we don't. But again, this isn't about reducing risk. This is about trying to score political points in an election year.
James used the word dash, that's kind of a new one now. What do you think of the language? There's, you know, call it dash, call it ISIS, call it ISIL. Some say, for example, candidates running for president are sparring over whether you call terrorism radical Islam or something else. What's in a name?
Well, you know, first of all, with the issue of Daesh, if you go to most of the Arab media in the Arab world, they actually use the word Daesh because the groups that are part of, if you want to call it ISIL or ISIS or Daesh, they actually do not like that word. It has actually a very negative connotation in English and, in Arabic. So because of that, most of the media and most of the people just call them Daesh because they say, you know, they want that negative connotation to stick with them. They don't want to use Islamic State because they don't consider them, so most Muslims do not consider them either to be Islamic or a state. They just consider them to be a bunch of wild, barbaric extremists. And so that's why they use the word Daesh, and they've actually encouraged others to use the word Daesh rather than using the terms that these extremists themselves want to use. With regards to this, you know, what do we call people who are extremists? Again, some of the politicians want to say, hey, we want to define these people as being Muslims because what is motivating them is the religion, and so we should call them Islamic extremists. As a Muslim, I find that offensive because I don't want to associate these brutal, savage people with my religion. And so I do not wish to call them Islamic extremists because I believe that that gives them some kind of religious credibility, at least in the eyes of some. And I don't believe that they have any kind of religious credibility whatsoever. Yet those who try to use that terminology, I think have more the intent that they just want to malign and attack all Muslims and the religion of Islam and not just the extremists.
And you just want to say extremists, not Islamic or extremists or radical Islam.
Yeah, I want to say that these are terrorists, they're extremists, they're savages, they're brutal. I don't want to associate them with my religion, just like I don't think most Christians would want to associate groups like the Ku Klux Klan with Christianity or Westboro, you know, to say that these are actually Christians or like Anders Breivik, who killed scores of children in Norway. Although he used in his manifesto, a great deal of Christian terminology and so forth, but I think Christians rightfully would reject such an individual as representing their faith. All that I'm saying is let's use the same standard for everyone and not use one standard for Muslims where we try to associate the entire Muslim community and their faith with extremists and not do the same for others. In my view, we should always disassociate extremists from the larger faith communities.
Back to the phones. Scott in Superior is with us now. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. Excellent program. I think we should first seek to understand when something happens, when something bad happens, first seek to understand. And those people that do so need to actually take part more in these public forums and debates. And, you know, frankly, Aaron Rodgers, to me, sounds more like a leader, a true leader, than some of the people that are actually seeking the office of president.
And I agree with you.
We don't talk about some of the things that come from groups that are expressing some terrible things that have happened to them over the years has come at the hand of the U.S. And there's a reason that ISIL or ISIS or Daesh exists. It's because we invaded Iraq. And then, you know, there's a reason that the people in Iran, and that there's a gulf between Iran and the U.S., it's because the U.S., through the CIA, overthrew a democratically elected president in Iran. And we don't acknowledge that history. We don't talk about it. And there are other examples. Palestine, what's going on there?
So Daesh exists because we invaded Iraq, and we don't talk about that, Othman Atta?
Well, I understand what the caller is getting at. There's clearly a problem in our foreign policy and some of the things that we've been doing, supporting dictators, you know, doing things. In fact, even in invading Iraq, although Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, they had a brutal dictator in Saddam Hussein, but it was not tied to 9/11 at all. It was a war of choice that was made. And it opened up a Pandora's box. There was no ISIS in that region prior to you know, this taking place. So I understand what the caller is getting at, in that there's a lot of issues and problems, and some of it our government has actually contributed to in terms of creating a particular atmosphere and environment. However, despite that, there is never any kind of justification for groups such as ISIS who will go and attack and kill innocent people and civilians and so forth. If a person has a legitimate grievance, whether it's an Iraqi or a Syrian or a Palestinian, I will certainly understand their just and legitimate grievance. But I will never understand, could never condone, and the religion could never justify committing violent acts or atrocities against innocent people, doing the kind of things that we hear about going on. That can never be justified, even if people have a justifiable cause in a particular country. But these kind of acts could never be justified.
You know, Steve emails saying that our governor is leading the charge. Fear of the other is easy to support, and that we do well. It's not just Governor Walker, but other governors and politicians are saying no Syrian refugees because of fear of a terrorist being among them. Any reaction to that?
Look, we don't want any kind of extremist to come in, but for those who may have worked with immigrants and who understand the vetting process that goes into it, it's an extremely rigorous vetting process with multiple layers of security. Before someone comes in, it takes a long time before they are finally approved. It is much easier to come into the United States on a visitor visa, much easier to come in on a work visa, than to come in as a refugee. I personally don't have any fear from any refugee coming in. But again, it goes back to the issue that I was mentioning a little earlier. It's a question of risk. Under this new legislation that was passed in the House, they want the heads of, I think, the FBI and Homeland Security and one other agency to personally certify every single individual that is going to be coming in. It basically is going to put a complete halt on us providing some kind of relief to refugees who are fleeing the atrocities. I mean, they're actually fleeing ISIS and the regime of Bashar Assad that is massacring them. I mean, they're basically caught between both. And we're telling them that, you know what, we're not going to let you in. We're not going to provide you relief, even though that is really what our country was founded upon. Yes, I believe that there should always be security. I believe that there is sufficient security measures that are taken for refugees coming in. But these individuals that are calling for these restrictions, again, are hypocritical, because when it comes to other areas such as white guys getting guns, you know, especially if there's a history of problems in particular communities, we don't say anything about those risks.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue our discussion on Islamophobia. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about combating Islamophobia in Wisconsin and in the United States with Othman Atta, the executive director of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. Welcoming your questions and your views, your experiences, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Next is Margo in Madison. Hello, Margo. Margo, are you there? Margo, you're...
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Well, yes, I am.
Go ahead, please. Well, Margo, you've got your radio on, and you're on the air, so I'll have to have you turn off your radio before going back to you. Let's go to Steve in Appleton. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I guess my question is this, and I welcome this conversation, but as somebody who spent time over in Saudi Arabia and other Muslim countries, there is a great racism towards Americans in those countries. Can we address that the same way? And if I may, have a counterpoint to what he said earlier about immigration. I would like to know how he feels about Americans or someone else trying to immigrate permanently to a Muslim country, because that wouldn't be allowed either. And I'll take my answers off the air. So thank you very much.
So... Steve seems to think that Muslims in the Middle East are I guess, racist against Westerners in the same way.
You know, it's interesting that he brings up Saudi Arabia, because the last person in the world that he will find justifying or supporting Saudi Arabia regime is me. I mean, remember, the Saudi Arabia is a very close ally of the United States. I personally believe that the Saudi regime, with their funds and so forth, have actually been promoting a very rigid view of Islam. And I think that they have done more of a disservice to Islam and Muslims than probably any other regime in the world. And yet they're a close ally of the United States. It's a despotic, monarchical, brutal, oppressive regime. And yet we're very close to them. So is that the fault of the Muslims in the world or the Muslim community, or is that something that we should look to our politicians and say, who are you supporting? Again, this has been, unfortunately, part of the history. Same thing in Egypt. We're right now supporting a brutal regime that, according to a number of human rights organizations, a few years ago committed the largest killing in the modern history of Egypt. Again, these are things that go on throughout the Middle East. Is that the problem of Muslims, or is that the problem of these particular regimes and our politics? My personal feeling is, I think if you ask most individuals who have traveled to Muslim countries from whether the United States or anything else, any other place in the world, they will tell you that they actually get a very hospitable, positive response from the people there.
We have some listeners who are objecting to the use of the word Islamophobia now. What is your definition of Islamophobia? And maybe you think I shouldn't be using that word.
You know, Islamophobia has basically just come up as those who have a very skewed, negative view of Islam. That it is of course, Islamophobia is not a fear, per se, of Muslims, but those who have this just very negative, attitude and view toward Islam and Muslims. I personally don't care if it's called Islamophobia, if it's called anti-Muslim bigotry, if it's called anti-Muslim hatred. I mean, for me, the term really is irrelevant.
Yeah. And... let's go back to the phones, and we'll go to Maddie in Wapaka. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. Wisconsin Public Radio has really done a good job of trying to educate the American people. But the vast majority of the news media in America has not done that. And so that's the reason why they lump all Muslims in the together. you know, and I agree 100%. We should not be supporting Saudi Arabia. Those ISIS people, they're from that group. And also, for those politicians who don't want to help the Syrian immigrants, who has been absent from Bible study the day that it was taught that Jesus said, you're not getting to heaven unless you help other people, and that was in the story of the Good Samaritan and the story about the sheep and the goats, where the sheep would get into heaven. They were people who helped people in need. The goats would be cast away.
Thank you very much, Maddie. So, Othman Atta, do you also blame the media for perhaps not doing a good enough job in covering these issues?
Well, let me kind of break it down a little bit. There's some media, obviously, media tends to report on the negative. I mean, I don't expect the media to come to the Islamic Society of Milwaukee and say, hey, you know, they just did another blood drive, or let's take a look at their food pantry and see what they're doing. I mean, that's not what the media tends to focus on. And then there, so part of the problem is the very nature of the media is they tend to focus on, you know, events, and they usually it tends to be negative events, and that's just the nature of the media. Unfortunately, though, there's some media that also is much more they advocate a particular point of view, very critical. They bring in so-called experts and other individuals who have very anti-Muslim views. And that's part of the problem that that we do see as well. So is media part of the problem? Yes, I would say some portions of the media, without naming, and I think that people can obviously figure it out on their own, but I think that there are some that clearly have an anti-Muslim point of view, and they are oftentimes broadcasting that.
Next we go. Margot in Madison is back with us. Hello, Margot.
Better. Sometimes in the interest of wanting to be kind and tolerant, and we are a kind and tolerant people in the West, and in the interest of political correctness, we turn a blind eye to the truth. I'd ask people to look at two things and then decide about ISIS. One is an article in the current Atlantic Monthly called What Does ISIS Want? It will tell you that ISIS is a completely legitimate orthodox form of Islam, but it is simply a medieval form, as Islam was practiced in the Middle Ages, where there was no tolerance for non-believers. The other thing to do is look at the Quran. See what statements you can find about tolerance for non-Islamic people. There is no tolerance. I am not trying to suggest that Christianity is a great religion either, because as we practiced it historically in the past, we had no tolerance for non-believers either, even within our own religion. But today we have evolved. Islam evolved too. That's why there are some tolerant people like your speaker today. But it doesn't mean that that's Islam.
Let Othman Atta respond to that.
She raises a number of issues which I strongly disagree with. Graham Wood, in his Atlantic piece, basically says that the ISIS people believe that they are following Islam, and they truly do believe that, just like the Ku Klux Klan believe that they're following Christianity, or just like when in Bosnia the Muslims were killed, those who were slaughtering them felt that, hey, we are following our Christian faith. Do I agree with Graham Wood's interpretation? No, I don't. I think that these people are following a skewed faith. In terms of her argument that in the Middle Ages Muslims were intolerant of others, I think she's actually has her history a bit wrong. Actually, in the Middle Ages, the intolerant were actually the Europeans, and the Muslims actually had a very tolerant society. I think if you go and you look at Muslim Spain, you look at many of the other countries where they were pluralistic, you had Muslims, Christians, Jews that were living together. Jews actually fled to Muslim countries. Moses Maimonides, one of the greatest Jewish scholars, who actually lived in what was Muslim Spain, and then after the Inquisition traveled to North Africa. I mean, this is all part of history, but people need to read history. They need to understand, you know, what actually has happened, and not to to focus or to base their information on, you know, just someone who comes up with really inaccurate history and inaccurate religious interpretation.
So what solutions do you see for the fear, the anti-Muslim rhetoric, the discomfort with Islam in the United States?
You know, I believe the only thing that we can do is to educate. And that this is true with regards to any kind of racism. I mean, Muslims have not been the first people that have been targeted by racism. You've had, you know, the African Americans, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Jews, the Irish, the Germans. I mean, everyone has gone through a period where they were stereotyped, the Catholics. You know, it's just a matter of education. It's getting away from the fear-mongering and the hatred and the political opportunists and trying to show that, hey, we are all in this together. If there are extremists from any faith or no faith at all, we must all stand against them. But at the same time, we are a diverse nation of ethnicities and religions, and we should really stand for what our nation is founded upon. That's the most important thing. Not those who try to divide and to try to promote hatred and bigotry.
Well, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Othman Atta, Executive Director of the Islamic Society of Wisconsin. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Coming up, we will talk with Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. He'll tell us what he thinks the U.S. should do to respond to the threat of ISIS, and we'll hear about his bill in the Senate to deal with Syrian refugees coming to the United States. We will also talk with a foreign policy analyst. Jeremy Suri will be joining us at 7:30, and we'll talk about what should the response be to respond to ISIS. That's coming up in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.